This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Welcome back. We are ending the year with the bad news this week that growth in the third quarter was worse than expected at a contraction of 0.6%, and the growth rate now in 2019 may now not even reach the much touted but very minimal 0.5% for the year as a whole, certainly if stage 4 load shedding continues for any length of time. The economy is in effect sinking fast. And I've got Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Asset Managers, in studio and on the line. Professor Raymond Parsons, who's head of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, who's already sunning it down in Arniston. Professor, welcome.
Hi, Michael.
Raymond, you managed to make it through the load shedding induced traffic chaos outside. As we reflect on the year and consider what's in store for us in 2020, I thought we could focus on three broad questions. How did we find ourselves in this pile of steaming wet economic excrement? What's happened over the past year to bring the economy to this point? And then ultimately, what needs to be done to fix all of this? So let's start where we began 12 months ago. What seems to have gone wrong this year, Raymond?
I think there are three or four issues which have brought us to where we are at the end of this year. The first is, of course, that the economic damage done to South Africa by the so-called lost decade was much bigger than anyone expected. And I think that's been underrated, and I think we haven't fully absorbed the extent to which this makes an assessment of what needed to be done just that much more difficult. Because what we ended up this year was with low growth, high unemployment, low tax revenues, and high debt. That's a formidable equation which then needs to be remedied. The second was, of course, the Eskom shocks, which are now back with us in the first quarter of the year, which took a chunk out of our growth performance for the year as a whole, and obviously an issue which is going to put a big cloud over our future growth prospects unless we get that right. And then, of course, we had an election, and that had both a positive and a negative side. But the important point here is that really both prior and subsequent to the outcome of that election, there were inadequate responses to the magnitude of what was clearly a very damaging situation that we had inherited from the so-called lost decade. So what it really boiled down to was that politics and Eskom really were the two most damaging factors during the course of the year. And if we want to manage these expectations, which arose both before and after that election, then I think we've got to decide how do we address the fact that during the course of this year, the bad news outweighed the good news. And that is really where we are at the end of this year. We need to see how can we change perceptions about our economy next year, which will give us a better growth performance and a better economic performance. That's where we stand now, and those are the causal factors which didn't all, by the way, occur this year, but began even before 2019, but had their full impact during the course of 2019, combined with a failure to respond adequately to the magnitude of what we were facing.
Absolutely. A lot of these issues actually had their genesis, probably, if you want to be cynical, in the National Democratic Revolution, Warwick, and what's coming home to roost now with SAA and Eskom. Yep. And all of these issues are ideological issues of the developmental state that clearly hasn't worked.
And the invoice is landed with a loud thump. I mean, let's take SAA. I recall that they had a pretty heavyweight board about 2011, 2012, Russell Loebscher amongst them, and a number of them resigned, saying then that SAA was inappropriately capitalized and it would not be viable as a business. And hey presto, here we are 7 years on. I see now talking about state and lenders providing $4 billion for SAA. Not a chance. That's just going to go absolutely nowhere. I mean, this is a business that needs something like a 20 billion rand recapitalization if it is to work. And frankly, I'm not sure that anyone really should want it to work. I mean, it has got a proven record of repeated failure that just is no longer worth bothering
with. But isn't this, Michael, symptomatic? You know, we've got to stand back and say, if we want to do things differently and better in future, we've got to draw the governance and other economic lessons from what has gone wrong.
Correct.
And the problem is that in this country, we have over time raised our procrastination to such a fine art that we end up first doing all the wrong things before we find out what is the right thing to do, by which their time it's much more costly. And, of course, your sort of whole timing is all wrong. So, I mean, you end up in the worst of all possible situations. And it comes back to the issue that whether it's state-owned enterprises, but they happen to be, you know, the sort of dramatis personae here, the fact is that we've got to reduce the political interference in what ought to be business and economic decisions. And I think a lot of what has happened now is the result of excessive political interference in what ought to have been business operations run for the benefit of the public and not for a particular group or, you know, some other group.
Well, I think SAA is so illustrative of that particular point, Raymond. If we saw how events unfolded on Wednesday evening, there was a leaked letter from the presidency to his cabinet colleagues informing them that he had instructed the board to take this action to place the airline in business rescue. Chatting to Martin Kingston, it's quite clear that the board took this decision independently, as they would rightly have to do in terms of the Companies Act. But it just smacks of a government that doesn't really have too much respect for the boards of these state-owned enterprises that it elects and appoints to do a particular job. And the big question, and Warwick, back to your issue and point around the business rescue, is one of whether or not the business rescue practitioner, Les Mattison, who's very well regarded, he was the business rescue practitioner in the Ellerines business rescue, which was until this point the biggest business rescue in the country, whether or not Les will be able to withstand the government influence that is undoubtedly going to come to bear on this whole farrago. And once again, will be another indicator as to how serious this administration is to true reform.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think debt is still going to be the final determinant. I mean, that debt is so deep and the running losses are so substantial that they are actually on their own weight going to force the issue, I think, quite quickly.
And confidence. Who's going to be buying a ticket in an airline that is in business rescue and uncertain as to whether or not you're going to be able to redeem that ticket over December or even Easter next year? The insurance companies, the travel agencies are...
They're risk losing their best time of year in terms of load factors.
Yeah.
But Michael, let me expand that issue. We talk about confidence. And I mean, obviously SAA is a very dramatic example of how not to do these things. Hopefully we'll have learnt the lessons. But, you know, when we talk about confidence, if we can't keep the lights on, you can forget about investor confidence, and that is what matters much more than, of course, SAA. Because if Eskom can't keep the lights on, then all our forecasts for growth and investment are going to be jeopardized for, you know, next year. So this whole issue of uncertainty, not only for SAA, but compared with Eskom, it's a walk-on part in terms of what we want from Eskom. And I think this issue of ending the year, showing that we are going to inject more certainty into our decisions, into good decision-making about state-owned enterprises as well as other issues, is absolutely cardinal. And this is one of the big lessons of this year as far as policymaking is concerned.
Well, it's important that we started the year with load shedding and we're ending the year with load shedding. The fact remains is that we've had all of the flowery speeches and good plans and intentions paraded and trotted out, the IRP, the energy roadmap, turnaround strategies, a new CEO announced, and all of it has made zero difference. I know the problems are complex and it's going to take a long time to turn around, but Warwick, it doesn't inspire any confidence that here we are, Eskom power cuts again, stage two to stage four in one day.
Absolutely.
It's a farce.
I mean, economists talk about supply side or demand side. Both are absolutely shredded at the moment. I mean, supply side, well, I mean, incentives for business. Well, cost of capital is enormous. Power suppliers and their demand side, high real rates. I mean, they're north of 5-6%. And I mean, we can see it with inflation at 3.8 and probably falling. We're actually outside the Reserve Bank's band. And the consumer, I mean, well, we can see the consumer is just going nowhere. So this is a structural problem, clearly.
A structural problem that has many components. And I want to perhaps zoom in now on one or two others. We'll probably come back to Eskom. But when you look, Raymond, at the structural issues that needed to be changed, their labor issues and their issues in network industries like telecommunications, there were issues around the visas, and the president stood up in his State of the Nation and said he wants to improve our ease of doing business. Well, in many of those areas, we haven't made much progress. In the ease of doing business, we've actually lost ground against our competitors. In the telecom space, there is talk about auctioning off spectrum, but we haven't seen anything yet. In fact, all we've had is the competition authorities come out and wave a potentially very big stick at the mobile network operators, Vodacom and MTN, and impose very curious demands on providing things like free data to consumers. It's not even enshrined in the Bill of Rights, and here you have a government telling a private entity to try and do what government should be doing at the end of the day. It's just all muddled.
I think the challenge of this year, and indeed of the past 2 years, you could say, since the important political change at the ANC conference, I think what one has been hoping is that we would now more successfully walk the talk, to use that cliche, that there have been enough plans on the table. We have another plan, of course, from the National Treasury, which has many of these components in it. And you've got to keep asking yourself, what is it that makes it so difficult? Why are there so many no-go areas at the end of the day when you want to implement? There's so many dirty words that can't be used, whether it's, you know, whether it's the public, whether it's the public wage bill, whether it's a degree of, you know, privatization, whether it's trying to tackle the debt of the local authorities. There's so many no-go areas that seem to blunt implementation so that it constantly falls short of, as I said earlier, of the magnitude of what you have to put right. So unless you have aggressive implementation backed by strong leadership and underpinned by the political will necessary from time to time to be unpopular, I know it's easy to say it, but I'm afraid that's where we are, so that ultimately you've got to say we are engaged on deciding how is the pain of getting South Africa right to be distributed over various stakeholders. That calls for leadership, political will, and negotiation, skillful negotiation. Otherwise, we are always going to fall short of what we promise. We're full of these various promissory notes that never seem to fall due. Yet, there are good intentions. I mean, we've had investment conferences, all sorts of commitments have been made. I'm hoping that at the next important summit meeting, which takes place in a few weeks' time between organized business and government, there will be some accountability for what has been promised and what has been realized, because our economic performance is telling us that we are not meeting what we have said we would do, whether it's in the public or the private sector.
We're woefully short of that. You know, the president stood up in the State of the Nation address at the beginning of the year and said his aim is to grow the economy at rates that are greater than population growth, at around 1.5 to 1.7%. And we're a third of that, at best, considering what load shedding might do to the fourth and very important quarter. So much still needs to be done. What has been done? What is positive? Warwick visas, we've seen some movement there. We've seen the unabridged birth certificate issue finally put to bed. We have had investment conferences. Whether or not businesses want to invest in this environment is still a big question mark and debatable point, because the regulatory environment hasn't really improved. We see further uncertainty around the MPRDA. Just this week, regulations were drafted and published with 30 days to comment, and they create more onerous conditions and responsibilities on mining companies and in terms of their social and labor plans, and back to the competition authorities, certainly not rolling out the welcome mat for business either. So it isn't an environment that is at this stage conducive to investment from a regulatory reform perspective.
Unfortunately, I don't think just a reset is enough, and taking away those birth certificate requirements were a reset, which, by the way, will take quite some time to communicate through and to, I mean, there will be multiple counterparty websites and agents and so on that will have to be informed and trust that the new environment is correct and viable. And I mean, when you consider, I mean, there's an idiotic law that's seen thousands of tourists turn away from South Africa over the years, and that's the one with requiring a passport that's got 6 months validity left on it. Insane. It's not a functional piece of legislation. I've hardly ever seen it on any other country. I mean, a valid passport's a valid passport. Why are we persisting with that piece of idiocy? And that's just one small example. I guess the one area that I suppose we can look a little bit positive is in gross fixed capital formation, i.e. construction and so on. Looking at the AFRIMAT index, I mean, that's looking quite positive. And those are kind of forward-looking data, things like buildings plans passed, building materials bought and so on. But, yeah, best we continue to at least supply a little bit of power so that all those pneumatic drills and all the rest of it can actually operate. Otherwise, that's going to get wasted.
And
you see, that's an important point. If you're going to have some of these little green shoots for next year, they mustn't be smothered by the weeds of regulation or uncertainty or by ESCOM. You see, I come back to my point. It isn't as there isn't some good news. It's constantly being swamped by more bad news. And actually, we want to dedicate ourselves to ensuring that the good news triumphs over the bad news so that we can increase our growth rate and do all the good things that we want to do. But that will require certain things to be done better and done differently next year.
And just to stay on the issue of, well, it depends on which side of the fence you sit on this issue, on either good or bad news. Is Parliament publishing the proposed amendment for the Constitution to allow expropriation of land without compensation? That happened today, but it's without details of the accompanying legislation to actually specify when that would actually be used. It does specify, though, that EWC is to be for purposes of land reform only, though. But it's one of those polarizing issues, with some inside the ruling party saying that all this does is provide certainty and clarity under which circumstances property can be expropriated, while others saying if you amend the Constitution, it's going to send fright through the market and send foreign investors running for the hills. I was reading in the FT today that you can pick up a nice wine estate down in Frontshook for about $3.5 million, which will probably get you a parking garage in London at the moment. But all of that might dry up. Should we handle the EWC issue poorly? How do you see that, Raymond? Are you the glass half full or glass half empty on EWC?
It all depends on what the outcome of that debate will be. Fortunately, it still has some way to go. And depending, there are three things here. It's land reform, food security, investor confidence. That's what you've got to balance out in this debate. And the issue here also is, let me say, we don't have to reinvent too many of these warning signals. If we take the credit rating agencies, there's been a consistent pattern with all of them over the past 18 months, what warning signals they have given us. And, I mean, they are simply the messenger. Some people like to shoot them, but nonetheless, they are giving us a message. They're simply holding up a mirror to the realities of which we are all aware, that need to be managed differently. But coming back to the land reform, I just make the point that what you've got to do here is to manage the trilemma of land reform, food security, and investor confidence. And therefore, how that debate is handled in the new year will be one of several of the important factors that will shape investor confidence and growth and employment next year.
It doesn't pass notice that the DTI has said that expropriation of land is facing a major legal problem, and that's thanks to our bilateral investment treaties. We've currently got 49 so-called BITs, and they contain the legal undertakings on the expropriation and compensation of the property of any investor into the country. And they don't refer to land explicitly, but it does extend protection to investments defined in open-ended terms in an asset-based approach. So those treaties cover every kind of asset of an investor in the territory of the host country, such as South Africa. And such an affected investor would be in a position to invoke a legal challenge against South Africa and the government if that investor isn't satisfied with the compensation offered. So this isn't an open-shut case at all. It'll be interesting to see that accompanying legislation next week. But as we wrap up the panel, Raymond, I hope you've got that crystal ball working, and bearing in mind that a market commentator is an expert who will know tomorrow why the things he predicted yesterday didn't happen today. Gaze into it for me, and which scenario do you see playing out in South Africa?
Well, Michael, let me say this, that quite clearly the big feature of next year is going to be whether we can create the necessary certainty within which there will be investment, job-rich growth, and all the things that we want to see to get beyond arguing about which decimal point growth do we favor, 0.5, 0.6. We've got to break out of that syndrome. There's the State of the Nation address coming. There's the budget. We haven't said much about our whole big problem in the field of public finances. I would put it to you this way. We have a double-barreled approach. The one is, of course, these various governance issues, corruption, state capture, the Zondo Commission. And the other battle is, of course, the debt issue. That is tremendously important, and I think how we handle it next year will be very important. So I would like to conclude, if I may, with a quote, which I think sums up this double-barreled approach to next year. It's an old proverb which says that heavenly vengeance pursues a crime slowly, but nevertheless it catches up with it in the end. In matters of debt, the penalty is not halting. It pursues the culprit at a gallop. We've got to watch out for that next year.
The ratings agencies are the ones galloping towards us, Warwick. In the scenarios that we have to play out next year, there's obviously a high road type of scenario where we see greater emphasis on reforms. We actually see Eskom split into three. Perhaps we avoid a ratings downgrade and the global economic environment remains benign enough for us to really start seeing these green shoots flourish, and we manage to keep the lights on. And there's on the opposite side of that, so the low road scenario. We get downgraded, the rand goes out to 20, we can't keep the lights on, and we see further infighting in the ruling party absolutely shatter confidence already at post-World War II lows. And then there's bumble along. Which way do you see us going?
I think pretty much the best I can see is bumble along. I mean, I think events are going to play us. We are not going to play events. I think we may find that downgrade actually comes with a small blessing in the form of the cushion of a weaker rand, because, quite frankly, that's about the only thing that I can see putting a bit of growth through this economy, because unfortunately Saab seems absolutely determined to stand in the way of any growth here at all. And I must say, if they're not handbraking the economy, well, then Eskom is. So, I'm afraid not a lot of Christmas cheer there. And, I mean, even the turkeys are sticking around in Parliament. Our lives.
And the mangy chickens have come home to roost on SAA as well. Raymond, just on that issue of the Reserve Bank, if inflation persists below the midway point of 4.5%, despite what happens with Moody's, surely the onus must now be squarely on the Reserve Bank to start considering cutting. And one would also like to see the numbers of the MPC increased to ensure that we've got a full committee, because for a while now we've only had 5 members of that committee.
I think, Michael, we agreed that, of course, monetary policy can't do all this heavy lifting that we've been talking about, but it has an important supplementary role, particularly when you get to the point where we are concerned about growth, even the bank is concerned about growth. Borrowing costs do play a part, especially if your rates become very positive, as they are now. So I'm hoping that in the new year there will be some adjustment, and that we won't find that, you know, that we'll be saying that that inflation targeting was a success. Unfortunately, the patient died.
Well, we certainly won't want to be around if the SA Inc. patient dies on us now, Raymond. I think on that point, I'm going to wish you well. Have a wonderful breakdown in Arniston, and we'll see you bright and early in the new year. All the best for your Christmas and to your family as well. Take care.
And the same to you. Thank you.
Likewise, Warwick, thanks so much for a year of laughs and insights. And on a serious note, let's hope that this long game that the president is playing starts to bear fruit in the new year. Take care.
And from me, happy Christmas to the listeners.
That was Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer of Galileo Asset Managers, and Professor Raymond Parsons, Head of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, with the concluding view from the political economy here on Classic Business. Well, for foreign investors, I think that long-term outlook is positive, but there is clearly an opportunity cost in keeping money tied up when progress is hard to see. Ramaphosa is playing a long game, but he does risk running out of time, as Bloomberg said today. That's a wrap for this week. Flo Masebe reminds us that if your signature is required for a freelancer to get their pay before the holidays, please do the right thing before you go on leave. Thanks to producer Andres Matlangu and sound engineers Mataba Taba Radebe and Mawanda Lorbe in Cape Town. The Jazz Lounge with Rod Miller up next if you're in Cape Town. And in Gauteng, Carolyn Stain has a double bill of winding down. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week for the best of 2019 editions of Classic Business. Good night.